So if you're a developer interested in cloud, you should be attending the Red Hat London Developer Day at London South Bank University on Thursday, 1st of November. Come hear the latest, greatest technologies talking about Gluster, Red Hat Enterprise Linux, talking about JBoss, talking about OpenShift, OpenStack, all cloud goodness. So if you're interested in cloud, get on down to London South Bank University, Thursday, 1st of November. For more information, follow the links on my website.
Hi everyone, this is Gordon Half, Cloud Evangelist with Red Hat, and I'm sitting here with my counterpart over in Europe, Richard Morrell, who is our Cloud Evangelist in the EMEA region. We're going to do something a little bit differently today. Both Richard and I have regularly been doing a lot of interviews with technologists and others in the cloud space, and encourage you to check those out. But we're going to start a semi-regular series of chats about what is going on in technology, specifically in areas that touch on cloud computing. So welcome, Richard.
Thank you very much for having me.
So this week, some fruit company was announcing something or other out in California, but I'd like to talk about something else that was happening in California this week. Mm-hmm. And that was the Intel Developers Forum, which is an event that I've attended way too many times over way too many years. But that's still very much in the center of a lot of the processing and advancement in hardware technology and associated software that's going on. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to talk, first of all, about the server space and then about the client space. So server space first. Mm-hmm. I'm going to throw something out here and feel free to agree or disagree with it. And that is that the cloud saved Moore's Law, or perhaps a little more detail, the cloud really brought in these new types of very parallelized applications that allowed things like massive multi-core processing to actually be useful.
Sure.
Agree or disagree?
I agree to a certain extent, but the whole Moore's Law paradigm when it comes to cloud it's quite jaded. I feel that Moore's Law when it comes to virtualized environments rather than para-virtualized environments really starts to fall apart. I think actually we're on the verge of something a little bit different, a little bit new. We're looking now at the ability for very large scale hardware vendors to start understanding more about what customers require. So the cloud gives them the ability to be able to do a lot more detailed analysis of what customers are actually doing with hardware for the first time. It's not just about racking and stacking blade servers. It's not just about looking at CPU count, et cetera, et cetera. It's actually understanding how long an application has been up in cloud, what people are actually doing with that application, and getting the most out of that core environment within cloud. So although Moore's Law with regards to development over time and the release of new hardware, etc., is still important, I really don't believe that it's as important as some analysts would have you believe. I think more and more it's actually putting the ethos on the software and the application developers to be able to get the best out of the hardware that's available, because hardware vendors are communicating more at a more granular level with the people in that field. We're able to do more for less money. We're getting more bang for the buck. And as software vendors, the onus is back on us as developers of these environments to make sure that we're getting the best out of the hardware drivers and all the kernel drivers that we've got, and to enable people to do that.
I agree. I see what you're saying. At the same time, though, I still believe that Moore's Law, whatever you want to call it, is still one of the fundamental drivers in this industry, because if stuff doesn't keep getting faster as perceived by the ultimate application, then that would change an awful lot of things.
Right. Okay, so you could probably also have the same argument with regards to Moore's Law when it comes to things like, cloud pricings, where you've got people discussing the whole issue around calculations that increase the incremental cost of using a system versus the cost of it just sitting idle in your data center. So, you know, bursting out to the cloud to get more bang for your buck, and, you know, an incremental cost plus a potential baseline cost during the period you're actually using that, it now starts to paint a real picture that actually we need to be able to do much more than we're currently doing, even if we're having to pay a premium for using that service in cloud.
I mean, essentially, you're making an efficiency argument that cloud lets us use resources a lot more efficiently, and that even if they're not getting as faster as they used to be, maybe, you can still increase the delivered performance through more efficient use of the overall resource.
Yeah, and I think doing it via an open source methodology actually pushes the whole paradigm, because if you think about it, traditionally, if we look at the development environments that enterprise customers have been using either internally or via outsourcing to a third party, you know, they tend to use established methodologies, a .NET framework, to try and do things, whereas with the open source community, we're able to push the latest, greatest, bleeding edge Python and Perl and PHP and Ruby on Rails stuff to get more use of your application in that environment, and to be able to understand from context logging what your application's doing, where and when, and also the demands that it places on you from an IT administration perspective, and also from an ownership perspective. Because we're not having that traditional methodology where companies are racking and stacking servers for 2, 3, 4 years and writing those off against tax. Companies are using a server for 12 days, 9 hours, 13 minutes, and then they're tearing it down and standing up a new instance. So the whole understanding of how we consume that server-based technology and that server-based environment has disappeared now.
So, Richard, let's switch to the client side now. Matt Eastwood of IDC had an interesting quote earlier this week. That was, until very recently, Intel was a major disruptor. They're now fighting a war for mobile relevance and working to avoid a second front opening in the data center. Mm-hmm. And I would argue that what's happening here is the fact that so many applications are essentially back-end applications, and what's happening on the laptop, on the tablet, on the smartphone, are essentially windows into those applications, has removed the lock-in, really, associated with the Wintel monopoly. Agree or disagree?
Oh, completely agree. Couldn't agree more. It's bizarre. I was sitting on a train into London yesterday, and I'm a big iPad user, massive iPad user. But for some reason, I left the iPad turned off in my bag and turned my netbook on, which runs Fedora. And, you know, it's a very, very powerful 4 gig machine with an SSD drive, etc., etc. But running back to the iPad, I can do things 3, 4, 5 times quicker, and I have the same data that I'm attacking on the Fedora bots because it's sitting in an Amazon Cloud web repository. So it enables me to have no reliance whatsoever on the whole Wintel piece. I don't have a reliance on the fact that I don't need to think about where my application is stored locally. It could be stored anywhere on any virtualization technology whatsoever. And I think now Wintel's becoming less and less pertinent to the whole argument on technology. They don't seem to have the muscle that they once had, say 3, 4, 5, 6 years ago. And certainly developers have now got the freedom to be able to integrate more application side stuff than to start thinking about the whole environment that they're thinking about from a Wintel perspective. It just makes more sense to be able to do things more openly.
Well, you know, Patrick Moorhead, who's an other analyst, used to work for AMD. He had another comment that basically echoes exactly what you just said. He specifically mentions Intel, but obviously applies to Microsoft as well. And that is that Intel needs to show future PC usage models that keep the PC relevant long term. And that really seems to be a challenge.
It is a challenge. I couldn't agree more. I do more and more stuff in in the cloud. I don't need to have a reliance on a physical piece of hardware or a physical specific piece of hardware. In the office environment I have here, I have multiple desktops, multiple laptops, multiple tablets. And essentially, I'm doing one task with one piece of hardware. And I could be doing it in an internet cafe, or I could be doing it on any type of device. I don't have to have a sort of reliance on any one platform.
Although, you know, I will say one thing that serves on the other side, if you would, and this is probably too complicated a topic to get in today, but one thing that hasn't happened in a major way yet is really a shift to the open web as opposed to the App Store model, at least for devices like iPads and iPhones and so forth. It's still something of a walled garden as opposed to HTML5 open web.
Okay, so I think there are two or three things driving that. And the first thing, I think, is bandwidth. The closest anyone's coming to that sort of idea of moving out of that war garden is Google with the Chromebook. And businesses' adoption of Chromebook has been very poor, very sparse, very sporadic. Now, with technology I'm seeing from Japan and the Far East with the emergence of the 4G LTE networks, we're enabling customers to be able to get hold of applications quicker, faster, access their data always on because of mesh networks globally across the entire continent. They're able to do that sort of cool stuff. And the same in Holland I'm seeing as well. But in the rest of Europe, in parts of North America, especially when I'm traveling, I find that, I'm stuck in this jail-truited environment within my iPad of applications which are written using one SDK for one environment, but that the back-end data is still sitting in the cloud in some Elastic Compute resource or Elastic Computing node within Amazon or wherever else it's stored. So I think it's going to be an interesting thing where technology and things like broadband bandwidth and the ability to get broadband and to be able to roam and do stuff, it will make things easier. And the second one is that, as we move forward as technologists, we have to start thinking out the box as to how we interact with vendors with regards to specific hardware types. Now, Google and the whole Android model proves that they go and talk to the likes of Huawei, they go and talk to Motorola, they've got the acquisition of Motorola, bad example, but they talk to multiple vendors and they have an open SDK and an open development environment which enables people to get the best out of hardware design and to think ahead of how they're designing those processors and how they're designing those graphic chipsets, etc. And it enables developers to be able to write to a standard rather than to second guess stuff. It's almost like developers who write stuff for iPad and for iOS are developing backwards rather than ahead of time. It seems like people who are developing for the Android store, who are developing those applications, seem to be able to run faster and run quicker and to be able to get stuff out the door faster, not necessarily saying in a better and more secure fashion, but certainly doing things more openly and having those conversations with those hardware vendors, with the likes of Qualcomm, etc., enables people to be able to get devices to the market quicker and therefore to be able to get the best out of the host-based OS or runtime that's sitting on that device.
Yeah, I mean, we could have a very uninteresting debate about, iDevice versus Android and who's better and who's winning and other sorts of tiresome discussions that happen in the trade press all the time. But the fact of the matter is whatever side of the fence you sit on, it's clear that Android has made big gains. And even if it's not the only approach, even if that open approach isn't the only approach, it certainly is still one that's resonating with a lot of people.
But you could argue that it's failed miserably from a business core context, because if you go and talk to the GM 100 customers or FTSE 100 customers, how many of them have rolled out Android tablet devices? Very few. iPad is still the monopoly standard. RIM found out when trying to get the BlackBerry playbook out that if you try and invent a third model and you don't talk to openly and transparently and you bring a proprietary lock-in, it fails. Now, one of the reasons that Apple is successful in the tablet market is because they force people into a walled garden. They force people into a walled garden where they have a limited amount of hardware to support, but also a limited amount of physical updates to the version of the iOS that's sitting on the device itself. Now, Android actually makes it more difficult from a cloud perspective to use in a corporate environment, because potentially you've got version 2, version 3, or version 4 devices out there, all of which, from a bring your own device perspective, put an onus of ownership and security and governance and risk and regulation to the host company. But also, when they start thinking about how they stream data to these devices and how they lock these devices down for data loss or data repudiation and loss of risk of reputation by someone leaving this device on a train or a subway, you need to start thinking, how do I bring in the whole Android open thing into my environment? And I think a lot of enterprise CIOs get very scared when they start to think, well, maybe Android is just a little bit like Linux. Maybe it's developed by a man in Boise in Idaho in his pants. And I think that, that Apple still has the polished approach that plays safe with the CIO, and the fact that they have less large software updates and a more enterprise friendly environment to allow people to do things like Active Directory integration and all those cool stuff that people need to be able to do. Whereas with Android, if you've ever tried to get your work email on an Android device, you know, having to use a third-party client and having to do all buggy stuff, and then every time there's a software update, it just makes things very difficult. And from a cloud vendor perspective, you know, you have to start thinking about, well, if I'm going to put my data into a public cloud and I want people to be able to access it because I don't want them to have to go through a firewall or a stricter policy to get back to it, what are the safeguards I need to do from an enterprise perspective to keep that data safe and secure? So they plumb with the iPad because it just works. That's why I have one. I have an Android tablet. It's gathering dust somewhere.
But Richard, let me push back a little bit from the enterprise perspective here. This sort of idea that the enterprise, the Fortune 500 company, whatever, buys you a BlackBerry because that's the secure enterprise smartphone. Mm-hmm. Well, that's kind of last decade's thinking. I'm going to argue that enterprise IT departments and the vendors who sell them their security software, operating systems, implementation services, and so forth, ultimately have to deal with a multi-client world where people and partners are just using whatever as clients.
Sure. And that's why one of the cool things about Red Hat was when we were starting to think about API integration for the cloud and the whole Delta Cloud piece, it enabled us to start thinking out the box with the whole, well, if we're going to be having customers who are going to be writing applications for multiple devices, be it on a thin client, be it sitting in a web environment or whatever, if they have one API they can write across multiple hypervisor types, then at least there is an open standard and they stand a fighting chance of getting anywhere. And open interoperability is absolutely key. But I'm also seeing a lot of customers who are in the development arenas who are finding that they're having to split resources. I'll give you an example. There's a company in a town near Bristol here, staffed by some friends of mine, who are one of the leading ticketing vendors in Europe. And they use Amazon Web Services for their back end. And they have support for both a website, but also an Android and an Apple client, where they do tens of millions of pounds of business a month. But they have to have two specific pools of developers who are working on each specific code base because they don't know which horse to back. And it then becomes a guessing game as to trying to keep up with what a closed source vendor, Apple, is going to do in 6-8 months' time. And they often feel that the Android team are running ahead because there's forums and there's lots of people talking openly about what's going on, but also Google with the SDKs that they release and all the developers work that they put in, that the Android guys are able to run 100 miles ahead than the Apple guys, but they sometimes feel that they're both having their feet set in concrete because they're having to run a pace, and it just becomes difficult. So the write it once, deploy it anywhere model doesn't work when it comes to trying to work with the Android and Apple model. It may work if you're trying to write an application and deploy it across, say, a Xen environment or ESX environment in VMware at a hypervisor level, but it doesn't work in the mobile device for these devices, which are contextually getting their data from the cloud.
Although one of our partners with OpenShift, our platform as a service offering called Accelerator, that's one of the things that they're doing in their development environment is make it easier to write cross-platform native applications. And I expect that type of development environment is going to be one of the things that's in demand as you have this inevitable fragmentation to a certain degree. You know, as has been the case with Linux over the years, there is always this tension between kind of the open source, you can do anything, you're open, you open APIs, open standards, and as you alluded to, the desire to have stuff that works. Sort of out of the box without having to worry about a lot of different platforms.
Yeah, and I think as well as enterprise customers start thinking about moving to a mix of private and public cloud, that sort of open hybrid model, and they start thinking, well, you know, more and more of our people are road warriors. We want to cut our costs. We want to have people to be able to work from home. But also then, you know, we're in a recession. And one of the cool things about a recession is that a lot of companies end up in acquisition and merger strategies. And all of a sudden, a CIO has to all of a sudden inherit both the behavioral qualities of a new incumbent company that he's having to buy, but also the fact that as well as buying the company and 300 staff, they also came with 240 iPads or 240 Android devices and all these other cool things. And Appcelerator do a really good job. They got an award at a gathering where we got an award last night in London where I was present. And they got some really switched on cookies both in the States and also in Europe. And they're proving that the model, that there is a need and a demand out there for the ability to be able to have that integrated development methodology for having one set of code that will run on multiple devices. And I think, you know, maybe it's the smart people who will think about acquiring those guys.
Yeah, so maybe kind of to wrap up our discussion here, I think one of the common threads I hear in this discussion is that there's a lot of disruption going on here, but ultimately businesses need to be able to leverage the good parts of that disruption while still having the governance, policy, all of that kind of traditional stuff that doesn't go away because there are new cool client devices and applications out there.
Sure. So the ability to be able to build your own accreditation model as a enterprise or an institutional computer user is absolutely key. And I think it's one of those hidden discussions that a lot of cloud vendors and a lot of software vendors are quite nervous about having with cloud adoptees. And, you know, I go away and do talks, and one of the things that I say to people in a crowded room is, who wants to go to jail first? And you start to see the blood fade out of people's faces. And I couldn't be more honest, because there have been very few prosecutions or fines in cloud. I think in total it's on like 1.4 million in fines have actually been paid globally for data loss. No one's actually paid anything out. Is it going to take a major brand customer to have a major data loss in order for us to take governance, risk and control seriously? One of the conversations that we've been having with Red Hat's with the Cloud Security Alliance over the last 18 months, 2 years, and we're, you know, a very proud pusher of the CSA, and I talk about the CSA being this group of thousands of individuals worldwide who, for no remuneration, get together and talk about cloud security, but more than talk about it, they actually deliver cloud security control matrices, which allow you to be able to deploy your architecture against Basel or PCI or ISO 27001, 27002 out the box. But to have that as a living, breathing set of controls throughout the deployment of your cloud. Now, the great thing about cloud is, one, it's not going away. It's not going away anytime soon. It forces you from an SOE environment to start thinking on your head about how you are going to cope with the demand from your customers as you deploy more and more cloudy services. It will start with one requirement and then it will snowball. And if you as a customer haven't got the ability to understand your own governance, risk and control, I question your ability to be able to sign an SLA with any service provider. You have to understand what you have now, the applications and the platforms that you're looking to migrate, but more importantly, what you think the demand is going to be from your user base, and also potentially what services that you will try to migrate through and what demand that's actually going to put on your existing IT infrastructure.
Good advice. And I think that's probably some good advice to leave our listeners with. Thank you, Richard.
That's been great. Thanks for having me.